Now we call upon Brother Philip to provide us his remarks regarding Psalm 41. Let's pray.
Good evening, brothers and sisters. It's another opportunity for us to consider the Psalms that Brother Robert has announced to us. Probably from time to time during the course of our lives, we'll just limit the course of our lives to our lives in the truth. We've probably been hurt. We've probably had some sort of experience which has caused us grief. And to varying degrees, perhaps to the young amongst us, they may have experienced it as well. Certainly if we've been in the truth a number of years, then we've probably experienced it on many occasions. And no doubt, we ourselves as individuals have caused hurt to others as well. We've probably hurt our brethren and sisters in some form or other. And hopefully never in an intentional way, but probably in an unintentional way or in a misunderstanding of some sort or other. But I'm going to limit our thoughts this evening to the hurt that we might have felt from others to ourselves. It may have been, brothers and sisters, a hurt that has been very deep, because perhaps it has come from a member of our family, perhaps. Perhaps it has come from someone who we trusted. It may have come from someone in our family whom we trusted, or someone who is not in our family, but we trusted them all the same. And something might have happened, something might have been said, something might have been done that might have hurt us extremely deeply and cut us to the quick, as we use that expression. I'm sure, brethren and sisters, in greater or lesser degree, you and I have experienced that sort of emotion in our lives and in our hearts. And you as individuals sitting there, because I've already sat there and thought about these things, but you listening now at this time will probably be flashing back in your minds. The tape recorders, the CDs, will be going backwards and you'll be pinpointing, perhaps, points in your life where you can snap on straight away and think, I was hurt at that point. I was deeply hurt. Overwhelmingly so. So much so, perhaps, that as far as the truth was concerned and those associated with it, I would rather go a million miles away from it and them, perhaps. You were thinking of some experience, perhaps, in your mind. And I'm thinking of one in my mind. And I'm going to share that one with you now, before we consider Psalm 41. And I'm thinking of an incident where a brother shared his emotional experience with someone else, shared the responsibility of the things of the truth with someone else, and was bitterly let down, and those associated with him. And I'm thinking of Brother Robert Roberts. And I hope you will just bear with me, because I'm going to go through some of these details, because what I hoped to do is to use this example before we look at our psalm, and to try and enter into what we might call a modern day experience, though it's over 100 years ago. Brother Robert Roberts was a man with an extremely large heart. I don't know about you, brethren and sisters, but my mind is stimulated in the writings of Brother Thomas. But I almost feel I would rather stand in judgment by Brother Roberts rather than Brother Thomas. Brother Robert seemed to have that human element. He was an emotional, warm character, and one who had an extreme love for the truth and a love for his brethren and sisters. And we feel dwarfed when we consider such a character. In July, or thereabouts, 1876, a man accepted the truth, and you will know who this is. He was a congregational minister at one point, and his name was Robert Ashcroft. He was regarded in the writings as a man with an engaging personality. And regarding him, the writer of His Days and His Ways said that he, Robert Ashcroft, endured much, and he said that is indisputable. And Brother Roberts felt a great affection for him in consequence. And this is what was written in December 1884, however, about Robert Ashcroft. Having wearied under the restrictions of the truth, though still retaining a nominal connection and having left Birmingham for Liverpool, he started a magazine called The Exegetist, incidentally the first number of which was the only number that ever appeared, and in that number he propounded the doctrine of partial inspiration of the scriptures. Brother Roberts was dismayed. He had made the most of the ex-congregationalist minister and loved him as a brother, and had even given him the lists of names and addresses of subscribers to the Christadelphian to help launch the new magazine. Brother Roberts was absolutely devastated. If you read, brothers and sisters, the magazines of the Christadelphian for the years 1876 and 1877, you will find that Brother Roberts devoted a part of his magazine to what he called the diary of an ex-congregational minister, which was Robert Ashcroft. He shared for a small time the assistance of the magazine with Robert Ashcroft. He loved him, as that writer said, as a brother. And Brother Roberts must have been dashed when Robert Ashcroft treated the truth in that way. And it was at that time when the brethren and sisters experienced the dismay and the difficulties associated with that controversy which undermined the inspiration of the scriptures, that Brother Roberts, not just thinking of himself, but reflecting his emotions, wrote what we know as the Letters to the Elect of God in a time of trouble. I'd just like to quote some extracts from that. Robert Roberts writes, "For what are we at best but worms of the earth, fashioned in God's image, made of his clay, and permitted to live for a few years on the face of this glorious earth? The most righteous man can say with Job, whom the Lord reproved, 'Behold, I am vile. Wherefore I abhor myself and repent in dust and ashes.' If a righteous man could feel this abasement, is it a marvel that we who have add error to weakness and sin to corruptibility should sometimes feel broken in heart and contrite in spirit? It is right, but be not destroyed by this abasement. It is pleasing to God." So said Brother Roberts on page 10 of that booklet. "The time is long," he said, "and human nature is weak, and power fails, and you feel yourselves walking towards the darkness which bounds the horizon of all natural life. Yea, the darkness will oftentimes steal into the inmost soul and fill you with an indescribable horror as you survey the vastness of the universe in which God is apparently silent, and the almost infinite mass of abortive life that appears upon earth from generation to generation, be comforted concerning this also. This darkness is inseparable from God's plan. You are troubled, in another extract, and distressed by dissensions in the household of faith. Many of you have been plunged into deep grief, even unto many tears. Beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial. It is nothing new. It is the modern form of a very ancient and frequent experience, resulting from the fermentation of the diverse elements brought together by the knowledge of the truth. The gibes of the unthinking, the ineffable scorn of the proud, the unmixed hate of the evil man are not without place in the development of the saints of God. It is one of the many evils of our present situation that the endearments of the truth seem empty phrases. As it is with the name of God's family, the elect, so it is with the love that belongs to them. It is talked of only to seem a mockery or a thing that strong men are ashamed of. It may seem absent and dead as flowers of summer in the depth of winter, but it exists as actually as the roots and seeds under the snow, and will come forth in beauty and fragrance in due season. And now you find yourselves in a desert, in the midst of many people. You are alone, and where love is mainly a thing of memory or of painful desire. I've taken quite a bit to introduce Psalm 41, but I wanted to sort of get a real life experience. And Brother Roberts, in some of those extracts, to me, was not only reflecting the mood of the brethren and sisters that he wrote to, but he was reflecting his innermost feelings at such a crisis, when Robert Ashcroft acted as a traitor to him and to the truth. If we can empathize, brethren and sisters, with Brother Roberts, then I think we can find it so much the easier to try and enter into the words of the psalm. Psalm 41, brethren and sisters, is all about David and Christ and the deep emotions that they felt. And in many ways, the brethren who have already gone before me in the study of the Psalms have already painted the picture, which was the experience of David. Some of the thoughts have been already expressed. When we think in this Psalm 41, I know we haven't read it, it's only a short one, and as you're looking at this chapter, we can probably pick up the detail without having to read it in detail. We can see, however, that David, in his deep emotion, was suffering, as has been brought out to us this morning. There were three basic characters in this psalm, and Christ as the overarching fourth. David, Absalom, and Ahithophel. David and Christ being the supreme examples of faithfulness. Absalom and Ahithophel being the very antithesis of that. Let's consider David as he is referred to in this psalm. Verse 4 says, I said, Yahweh, be merciful unto me, heal my soul, for I have sinned against thee. The remorse that David experienced with the sin of Bathsheba never left him. And the consequences of that sin pursued him, as Yahweh said it would, for the rest of his life. He had family troubles. There were national revolts, and there was the disaffection of trusted friends. Not only that, brothers and sisters, but as has been brought out by Brother Robert and Brother Arthur today, verse 3 also indicates that at some particular period in his life, David was a sick man, physically sick, suffering from the infirmities of mortality. David says, Yahweh will strengthen him upon the bed of languishing. thou wilt make all his bed in his sickness. David was sick. His mind was mentally disturbed by the thought that he had offended the God whom he loved. This was no ordinary character when we consider David. He was deeply affected by what he had done, as Brother Robert and Brother Arthur has explained. And to top it all, he becomes physically ill. Whatever it was, whatever disease he had, it was debilitating. It was all-consuming. And it laid him down upon a bed of sickness. And to add to his problems, his own son led a revolt against him. Verse 6. If he come to see me, and we're suggesting that's reference to Absalom. If he come to see me when he was ill, when he came to see David, he speaketh vanity, his heart gathereth iniquity to itself. When he goeth abroad, he telleth it. And verse 9 is a reference to Ahithophel. Mine own familiar friend in whom I trusted, did eat of my bread, and lifted up his heel against me. And you've probably been thinking of Christ, because this is preeminently a messianic psalm. Jesus too had his bed of sickness, inasmuch as this highly righteous man, more righteous than any man that has lived, was conscious of the nature of sin, which, as Brother Thomas describes it, rankled in his flesh. His sin, which he describes with the spirit of the psalmist in what we consider, was a loathsome disease to Christ, while his enemies were all around trying to make him fall. And one of his closest associates, Judas, betrayed him. The background of the psalm is what Brother Robert has read for us. The analysis of it, we won't take too much detail in looking at this particular point in time. I've given that handout and we can look at it. Suffice it only to say that according to those who are expert in the Hebrew of the psalm, Psalm verse 13 is not a part of this 12th psalm. It's what's called a doxology, and it is the part which ends the first part of the first book of Psalms. As you may or may not know, the Psalms has been divided up into five parts, equating with the five books of the law: Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers and Deuteronomy. And Psalm 41 ends the first part of that, the book of Genesis, the Genesis block of Psalms, if you like. And verse 13 is the acclamation of praise to Yahweh: blessed be Yahweh Elohim of Israel. But the background is what Brother Robert has read for us, the rebellion and the revolt of Absalom. And that did many things, that revolt, brothers and sisters. It did many things, but the two things in particular, it gave an opportunity for the discontents in David's kingdom to rise up against him. And secondly, it gave an opportunity for one of his closest advisors to betray his true colours, or to reveal his true colours, Ahithophel. You will remember, brothers and sisters, when David was fleeing, and it was said that Ahithophel was with David. One can almost feel David's heart sinking down within him. Yahweh turned the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. There seemed to be a plea for desperation for David to ask Yahweh to somehow make that man's counsel foolish, on this occasion at least, because Ahithophel was an extremely wise man. We would like to venture to say he was a spiritual man. He was one of those strong men in the truth. And David could go and say, Ahithophel, what do I do in this situation? And Ahithophel would say, this is what you would do. And David would say, thank you, Ahithophel, I was struggling with that. And Ahithophel had proved to David time and time and time and time again that he was wise and motivated by the true principles of God's truth. Not like Joab, the cold-hearted politician of the kingdom. David would never in a million years go to Joab Because the truth didn't animate his life. But the matter of Bathsheba had turned the mind of Ahithophel. And I think I'm jumping my notes slightly. Just try to imagine David then, as we've all been trying to imagine David in various situations during the course of this short weekend, attacked by two powerful and emotional forces. And you might want to go back in the quietness of your own homes and read the psalm from beginning to end in your own time. But David was attacked at this particular point in his life by two powerful and emotional forces, as we've suggested. His own son and his close friend. A lesser man than David could never have endured the circumstances of those times. If David had not been the giant of faith that he was, if David had not been powerfully motivated by the principles of the truth, if he had not been deeply and consistently in love with Yahweh and all of Yahweh's name, then he would have been absolutely crushed at this time. Conscious of his sin, which was a grievous sin, adultery, murder, and blasphemy. Three things under which, as Brother Arthur pointed out, there was no sacrifice under the law. Yahweh has put away thy sin. Plus the fact of his sickness, and at the very time when he would need the succor of his friends and his close associate, it was the time that he learned that they had both been planning against him. His own son had been plotting against him. Can we begin to imagine not just a disobedient child who wouldn't listen to his parent, but one who had carefully taken the time to plot not just to get to the kingdom, but to even take away the life of his father? You will remember that when Absalom thought that he was on the verge of victory, he said, "Just kill the king. Just take the king." Absalom was a charismatic figure, as we learn from 2 Samuel 15. He was a man who attracted the masses. David was too, but for different reasons. But here was Absalom with his hair growing in some beautiful style, who was able to be appealing to the people. He made it his business at the time, it suggested, when David was ill, to go in the gate of the city when the people had problems and they were looking for David, perhaps as the supreme point of justice to give determination, and David wasn't there for some reason. The suggestion is he was ill. So Absalom jumps in his place and says, "Oh, you know," he says to the people, "if only there was somebody there to see your matter. Your matter is good and right. You know, you've really got a good point on this. There's no one in this kingdom who's listening to you." And so, as we read, he stole the hearts of the people. And he rose up early. You might have noticed that in verse 2 that Brother Robert read to us. He rose up early in the morning. Absalom was a man with some really, really good points. He was a man whose mind was as sharp as a knife. And that's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. As long as it's used in the correct way. He was a man who made it his business to get up early in the morning. He wasn't a slothful man. He didn't leave the grass grow under his feet. When he was brought back, and we read that he prepared himself chariots and horses. These were the Lotus of the day, the Jaguars that could be really impressive. He got the things that would. Human nature is impressed by things, aren't they? We're all like it to greater and lesser degrees. And he knew what could be appealing to the people, so he prepared him horses and chariots to go before the people. He rose early in the morning to do it. This man had a plan. You remember Absalom? When Tamar was humbled by Amnon, he said, "My sister, don't worry about it. Just take it easy." As we might say, use the phrase, "They just chill out." Yeah, Absalom chilled out, okay. He kept that in his heart for 2 years. He was there for 2 years nursing that grievance. He didn't allow it to slip from his considerations at all. And when the moment was right, and the circumstances were just right to get Amnon, he did it, and he did it effectually. He kept that grievance for 2 years, and possibly despised his father for not taking action against Amnon because he had humbled Tamar, his full sister. Verse 6 of this psalm: "If he come to see me, he speaketh vanity." Almost suggests a lot of empty talk, vanity. One was it Brother Robert spoke, Brother Arthur spoke about emptiness. David could see it at the time. "He speaketh falsehood." Rotherham says, "Falsehood doth he speak. His heart gathereth iniquity to itself. When he goeth abroad, he telleth it." Rotherham again renders it, "His own heart gathereth iniquity to itself. He goeth forth to tell it." Almost as if Absalom was going to see David to see how he was, not because he was concerned about his father's poor health, but he was gathering intelligence. He was gathering information. This was a plot that was developing. I don't know whether you noticed when you read that 2 Samuel 15 with Brother Robert, but it said he sent for Ahithophel. He didn't go and tell Ahithophel, "I've got a plan. Let's overthrow David." He sent for Ahithophel, and Ahithophel comes. It had all been decided. Ahithophel and Absalom had been plotting this. They'd been devising what was going to happen. I'm trying to find the verse. Verse 7. "All that hate me whisper together against me. Against me do they devise my hurt." Against me do they devise my hurt. Now that word "devise" apparently in the Hebrew means to weave and fabricate. Figuratively, to plot, to weave and fabricate. We got the idea of a rug or some piece of material being closely weaved together, every little detail being worked out, following a particular pattern. And Absalom was the mastermind behind this plan. And Ahithophel, no doubt, was giving him counsel as well. And it remained for Yahweh, ultimately, to deliver David by defeating, the scripture says, defeating the good counsel of Ahithophel. We won't go into it now. But you remember the counsel that Ahithophel gave David, gave Absalom. "Go get David now." And Hushai says, "No, that's a bad plan." It was preeminently an excellent plan. Ahithophel's plan was to strike when the iron is hot. "Don't let David's forces regroup, whatever you do." Ahithophel had the best plan. He was still a wise counselor. And when Hushai's plan was accepted, you know the sequel. Ahithophel could see the writing of the wall. It hit him. "Yahweh has rejected me." If such a good plan, if such a preeminently good plan could be disregarded, then Ahithophel knew at that point that Yahweh was working against him. It was all over. But here, coming back to this psalm, here we find that Absalom was carefully plotting to overthrow his father. Not only that, all that hate me whisper together against me. We read in that reading that Brother Robert read for us. I can't remember it. I'm going to have to turn it up in just a moment. And there came a messenger to David saying, "The hearts of the men of Israel are after Absalom." The hearts of the men of Israel are after Absalom. It wasn't all of the men of Israel in that sense, but they were sufficiently numerous to distress David. Just imagine yourself thinking that I've got the kingdom, I've got my aristocracy, if you like, I've got my counselors, and you're lying there on a bed of sickness, and you sense something is not right here. Maybe when your eyes turn up from your bed, people stop the whispering or go outside and continue their conversation. David realized that something wasn't right, but he discovered the extent of this coup, this plot, too late. Weakened by his age and by the suffering he was endured, he was taken by surprise. I don't think David had any idea of the extent of the revolt here, though I do believe that he suspected something when he was lying on his bed of sickness. Against me do they devise my hurt. Verse 8. Yes, sorry, we read that. Oh, verse 8. "An evil disease, says he, cleaveth fast unto him, and now that he lieth, he shall rise up no more." And you know, in some respects, that verse 8 may well have been the most cutting remark. David seems to have picked that up from somewhere. He says, "An evil disease, say they, cleaveth fast unto him." Remember Job? We've read a couple of references to Job over this weekend. Job's friends said, "Job, you must be really wicked to be suffering in this way." And Job, at the very time when he needed comfort and consolation, received those kind of words from those three friends who came to him. Job contended that he was righteous, that he'd done nothing wrong. Yet they attributed his sickness to sin. So too with David. No doubt we can imagine Ahithophel, who was deeply hurt over that matter of his granddaughter Bathsheba. He couldn't get over that, could he? He couldn't get over the fact that Bathsheba had been humbled by David, that her husband had been slain, and now that David was physically sick, Ahithophel was probably concluding to himself, "This is the consequence of David's sin. Yahweh is slaying him." And there were others who were picked up these feelings, these whispers, "An evil disease cleaveth unto him. Now that he lieth down, he will rise up no more." That's the end of him. That's the end of David. It's just a matter of time, and the kingdom will be ours. These were the enemies of David. And Ahithophel's blow in verse 9. "Yea," David says, "mine own familiar friend in whom I trusted, which did eat of my bread, hath lifted up his heel against me." As we've suggested already, brethren and sisters, that must have been a powerful blow. The literal Hebrew apparently is, "A man of my peace, whom I confided in." a man of my peace whom I confided in. It implies a very close bond between these two men. David and Ahithophel were like that. At least, that's how David saw it. David considered him an equal in spiritual things. He trusted Ahithophel. He ate bread with him. Eating bread with one another is symbolical of fellowship, isn't it? Yet he lifted up his heel against me. The marginal reference says magnified. The word means to heap up or to make great. It was a blow against David. Interesting that it makes reference to the heel there. Almost reminds us, doesn't it, of the words of Genesis 3:15, the bruising of the heel and the bruising of the head. The blow that David experienced must have felt like a crushing blow to him. David didn't know what was going to happen ultimately. His brother Robert and brother Arthur has indicated when he was going. Shimei, as we discussed earlier, in a symbolical gesture of stoning David, Shimei threw dust at him. Shimei knew what he was doing, throwing dust. He knew the Lord said adultery should be punished by stoning. David said, leave him alone. Yahweh hath bidden him. David put his complete confidence in Yahweh. And if Yahweh saw it fit, he would bring him back. Just like Job. Though he slay me, yet will I trust in him. Just a couple of chapters on. Sorry, Psalms on. Psalm 55. We read at verse 12. Similar words. For it was not an enemy that reproached me, then I could have borne it. Neither was it he that hated me that did magnify himself against me, then I would have hid myself from him. But it was thou, a man mine equal, my guide, and mine acquaintance. When you have an enemy, when you know who your enemy is or are, then you can handle that. It might not be easy. But David said, it wasn't an enemy. It was somebody who was my equal. Verse 20. He hath put forth his hands against such as be at peace with him. He hath broken his covenant. David regarded Ahithophel as being at peace with him. A man who was regarded as his equal. And David experienced the bitterness of his own son and a close friend rising up against him. Hopefully, brothers and sisters, when our initial considerations of Brother Roberts might have been or might have acted as a bridge to lead us to consider David, and David is acting as a bridge for us to consider Christ, because Christ is the one who is also, as we know, referred to in this psalm. Brother Grocott in Be Transformed says, the Psalms fill in the gaps and omissions of the Gospels. They take us behind the scenes and give us an inner view of the Gospel picture. What we have tried to convey in some of these verses in the Psalms is what Christ felt. As at least myself, feel that I can understand the emotions of David with Ahithophel and Absalom. And we must try and use those same thoughts to understand how Christ felt. Sometimes perhaps when we read the gospel message and we hear Christ's powerful words against the scribes and the Pharisees, that we don't always realize that underneath, this is how he felt. This is how he felt regarding the Jews that were around him, the enemies that were rising up against him, and Judas. The Spirit of Christ is in the Psalms. The feelings and the emotions that this psalm is portraying to us are the feelings and the emotions of Christ. And that's sometimes difficult for us to fully grasp, perhaps. Touched with the feelings of our infirmities, Paul says. A man of sorrows and acquainted with grief, Isaiah says. This is the Lord Jesus Christ we are talking about, who bore the nature of sin as a heavy weight of clay. Brother Robert spoke about it. No soundness in my flesh. Mine iniquities are gone over my head. My wounds stink and are corrupt. I am troubled. I'm bowed down greatly. That is the feelings of Christ as he bore the nature of sin. With all the enemies outside that he had the weight upon his shoulders of being the linchpin in God's purpose. And that sin's flesh was ever with him. Brother David, could you just hand out those sheets, please? I just thought that we would just cast our minds over the types that are here by way of analysis. I think my time is rapidly coming to a conclusion, I think. Do you know what I'm having to speak of? Okay. If we look just briefly then at that sheet, I've entitled it The Messianic Character of Psalm 41. If we cast our minds down on the psalm, maybe at your own leisure, you can see the experiences of Christ. Yahweh delivers the merciful. Christ was delivered. Yahweh preserves and gives life. And so on. I don't think I'll just read through them. I was intending perhaps to look at some of them, but my time, I think, is going to a large extent. And there's a few things I'd like to say before concluding. But some of those things, brethren and sisters, enable us to see Christ in that Psalm 41. And I think above all our considerations, maybe that is the greatest, to consider Christ. The one in particular, verse 9, which you know is the messianic verse that is quoted in the Gospel of John, my own familiar friend, quoted in John 13 and verse 18, but with an interesting omission. Well, as it says here, yea, my own familiar friend in whom I trusted, the phrase in whom I trusted is not quoted in in John 13 verse 18, because Christ never trusted Judas, because he knew what was in men. But he was still Christ's familiar friend in that sense. He'd been with him for 3.5 solid years. And it must have been heartbreaking for Christ to see Judas take that course. Jesus didn't treat Judas any differently from anyone else. When he washed the disciples' feet, Judas would have been there. When he provided the miracles, when he gave the discourses, Judas would be there. He didn't treat him in any different way to the rest of them. And it must have been equally as hurtful to Christ as it was to David when Ahithophel betrayed him. Maybe more so for Christ, because he could see the degenerate way that Judas would have gone, in a way which we could never detect in one another. So what lessons, brethren and sisters, as we try to draw our thoughts to a conclusion, what lessons can we take away when we consider the thoughts of Psalm 41? Brother Grocott, again, quoting Bree, Transformed, Volume 1, page 190, says, the Psalms, Brother Grocott says, portray the development of the mind and character of the multitudinous Christ. That's a different angle, isn't it? The Psalms portray the development of the mind and character of the multitudinous Christ. We know they portray the mind of Christ and the character of Christ. We've seen that several times today. But Brother Grocott takes us a step further and says that they portray the development of the mind and character of you and I. What are the lessons then? I think David provides in Psalm 41 the first lesson. First one. To use the words of Matthew chapter 5, verse 7, blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. David expressed it, blessed or happy is he that considereth the poor. Yahweh will deliver him in time of trouble. David was one of those magnanimous characters too. He said Brother Roberts was. David preeminently was, wasn't he? What a large-hearted character we find when we consider David. When we read through the Psalms, when we read through Samuel, we find a character who we love to think about. We try to identify him with him in his various ways. Well, he considered the poor. He considered those who were less fortunate perhaps than himself. And what David is telling us here, as David had mercy from Yahweh, so we should show mercy. Actually, David had more mercy from Yahweh whom he had wronged than from his friends whom he had helped. He said, happy is he that considereth the poor, Yahweh will deliver him. And notice the threefold promise here in the first three verses. Yahweh will deliver him. Verse 2, Yahweh will preserve him. Verse 3, Yahweh will strengthen him. For those who show mercy, as David did, David says, Yahweh will deliver him in time of trouble. The Revised Version renders that, deliver in the day of evil. This was David's day of evil, wasn't it? It was all coming to a head, as we've said. And it was Christ's day of evil when his enemies encompassed him about. Strong bulls of Bashan, Psalm 22. And it all came to a head. Let him deliver him if he delight in him. Well, Yahweh did delight in him. Preeminently so, because of his faithfulness. Blessed is he. Yahweh will deliver him in the day of evil. Verse 2, Yahweh will preserve him. The word is shamar, I think. I haven't recorded. But it means to hedge about. To hedge about, to protect. And did David receive protection of Yahweh? Yes, he did. It didn't seem like it at a certain point, but he did. He shall be blessed upon the earth. And keep him alive, it says. Yahweh shall preserve him and keep him alive. And the word alive there actually has the idea of giving life. And maybe the psalmist is projecting, and certainly messianic wise, it projects to the resurrection. Yahweh will protect him, will hedge him about, though the circumstances seem difficult and they are evil, but Yahweh is still protecting the faithful, and he will give life to them. As he gave life to Christ, after 3 days, Christ rose from the dead. His enemies said, he's finished. They said, Pilate, seal that tomb. Lest somebody come and steal him away, then the last end will be worse than the first. The tomb was void. Why seek ye him that liveth among the dead? The angel said to the disciples. Christ is alive. Thou wilt not deliver him into the will of his enemies. He shall be blessed upon the earth or the land. David came back. He followed the ark ultimately back into the city. And David was blessed in the city and peace. Yahweh will strengthen him upon the bed of languishing. He's not going to be delivered, providing that the individual themselves consider the poor. The other point, and I know we haven't dwelt upon many of the verses in detail, but verse 4, David said, I said, Yahweh, be merciful unto me, heal my soul. We've had reference to this, I can't remember. I think it was Brother Steve last night talked about Yahweh Rofika. The word heal there is the word Rapha, from where we get that word Rofika from. And only Yahweh can do that. David recognized that only Yahweh could heal him in the inner man. It was only Yahweh could do that. And David earnestly desired to be restored to his former upright position. Just keep your finger there and have a look at Psalm 51. Brother Robert, I think, quoted this one. Psalm 51 in verse 10, David says, create in me a clean heart, O Elohim, and renew a right spirit within me. This is also, Psalm 51 is also one of the, what they call the fourth penitential psalm. I think it's the fourth penitential psalm. And David wants to create a clean heart in me. David could not get away from that sin. Only Yahweh, brethren and sisters, is able to heal us. There's no other way that we can have that good conscience before our Creator. He alone can heal us through the power of the Word, as I think Brother Arthur and Brother Robert brought out earlier on today. The third point that I thought we always need to remember, despite the difficulties, despite the problems that we might have, verse 11 says, because this I know, thou favourest me, because mine enemy doth not triumph over me. That's something we need to remember. The enemy will not triumph. Actually, that word triumph there, it means to split the ears with sound. To split the ears with sound. And I guess the idea would be that when you gain a victory, you pick up your shofar and you give it a blast. Because you've gained the victory, or maybe it'd be the silver trumpet. You pick it up and you'd sound forth, and it would be an ear-splitting sound that would give everyone an indication that you've gained the victory. The trumpet sound of victory, as it were. The sound of triumph. And you can imagine, brethren and sisters, if David had become a corpse that they would have thrown into some pit, and Absalom would have taken the crown with Ahithophel by his side, you can imagine the sounds of jubilation, the splitting sound, ear sounds that would have echoed throughout Jerusalem. But David says, I know that thou, actually the word can be rendered delight, thou delightest in me. So mine enemy doth not triumph over me. Psalm 31 and verse 17 says, let me not be ashamed, O Yahweh, for I have called upon thee. Let the wicked be ashamed, and let them be silent in the grave. Absalom had a rod thrust through his heart at the command of Joab. Actually, I can't remember the word now, but you know, it the same word that was a rod, it actually can be rendered scepter as well. And one writer I remember reading some years ago said, the scepter that could have been his was now thrust through his heart. That might not have been a correct comment exactly, because Solomon was due to be king. Absalom was now next in line, I believe, after Amnon. But Solomon was the one who was promised by Yahweh. But it was an interesting thought. But Absalom was now silent in the grave. And Ahithophel was in a suicide's grave. Let's try, brethren and sisters. Fourth point I tried to think about in thinking about this psalm, to remember the characters of this psalm. Absalom, an opportunity at least to be a preeminent prince in David's kingdom. He chose rather to rebel against Yahweh's anointed. Ahithophel. Opportunity at least to be one of the valued aristocracy of David's kingdom. Lying in a suicide grave because he assisted in the rebellion of one of the most righteous men of the age. A man who was an absolute giant in faith and righteousness. Can't begin to compare ourselves with David. And David. Yes, and David. A man who was plagued with the weakness of the flesh, but who triumphed. Who triumphed, brethren and sisters, despite his weaknesses, despite all his troubles, he triumphed because Yahweh delighted in him. And verse 12 shows us the reward. As for me, David says, and as Christ said, thou upholdest me in mine integrity. And the word integrity means blameless. The critic apparently likes to criticize David because of Bathsheba. As far as God's concerned, he's blameless. He's blameless. He'll be amongst those who will be presented faultless before the presence of Yahweh's glory with exceeding joy. He'll be presented faultless. This character, what can we say about David? Thou upholdest me in mine integrity and settest me before thy face forever. Before thy face. David, in that travel with Ahithophel, he stayed at a place called Mahanaim. And it's in 2 Samuel chapter 15, verse 25, or in chapter 2 Samuel 17, verse 24. He was at Mahanaim. Mahanaim was where Jacob was when he learned that Esau was coming to him, you remember? And Jacob was panic-stricken. And he prays to Yahweh. And he goes on and he wrestles with that angel, remember? And he calls the name of the place Penuel. For I have seen the faces of Elohim. Face in Hebrew, I believe, is plural. Faces also refers to the faces of the cherubim and the divine character of the deity. Jacob had wrestled, and in a sense, we wonder whether David, when he was at Mahanaim, thought about Jacob in his wrestling with the angel and obtaining the blessing. David, all through his life, through his wilderness trials, when he fled from Saul, he wrestled all his life, brothers and sisters, and he gained the victory. Thou settest me before thy faces, the faces of the cherubim of glory, of which David will be a part. When that ark was brought back to Jerusalem, David was not too long in following it back. And it was David who had actually brought the ark with the cherubim and the glory of the deity, which David treasured so highly. David will ultimately, with Christ, become part of that glory. Verse 13, blessed be Yahweh Elohim of Israel from everlasting and to everlasting. Amen and amen. And again, that psalm was composed, as the notes say, when he brought the ark up into Jerusalem. There's glorious thoughts associated with that. I would just like to conclude as we began. During the time, brethren and sisters, of Brother Robert's trials, it's perhaps not without significance that in the Christadelphian for March 1885, a poem appeared. O weary heart, why art thou sad and lonely? No heart can echo back thine own. No human heart can fully share thy sorrows. Thy heaviest crosses thou must bear alone. Life's battles thou must fight all single-handed. No friend, however dear, can bear thy pain. No other soul can ever bear thy burdens, nor the hand for thee the prize may gain. Lonely we journey through this world of sorrow. No heart in full respondeth to our own. Each one alone must meet his own tomorrow. Each one must tread the weary way alone. Yet one there is who knows our very every sorrow, who sympathizes with each secret pain, who bore our griefs and carried all our sorrows, that we, through his dear love, his peace might gain. Ah, weary heart, why art thou sad and lonely? Why this vain longing for an answering sigh? Thy griefs, thy longings, trials and temptations are known and felt by him who dwells on high.